Let's open our Bibles to the book of 1 Chronicles, chapter 29. 1 Chronicles, chapter 29. That's in the Old Testament. And we have been studying a couple of individuals from 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings. And then this morning, our interest is from the book of 1 Chronicles. And what we will do is kind of step back a little bit and check where we are at with regards to these three books or six books, just so we can have a better understanding of what's going on. Because if you already picked up, there's a couple of overlaps from 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles. You probably noticed that David and Solomon keeps popping up from these three or six books. They have... for the powerful remote. And the search begins. But they have a couple of overlaps from those three books. There we go. 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles. You see that David and Solomon keeps popping up because they were, these two kings, not only our father and son duo, but they were the highlight of the Israelite nation. And we have picked up a couple of lessons from these two kings, two great kings. And they can be considered, during their time, that this was the golden year or golden age of the Israelite nation. And so again, this morning we're going to talk about David and about his integrity and about his heart. And I want to remind us that, first, this lesson is not just for you, it's not just for me, it's for us. And it's not just for us in this church community, but it's for every Christian community out there. And it's something that we need to remind ourselves. So it's not, I'm not talking just because it seems like this guy is better than me. That's not the sense of where we're going to talk about this lesson this morning. We are all in this, and we wanna talk about this because this is something I think it's hard for me to talk about, but it's something that we need to think and to process and to consider. So we'll go to the next slide. First Chronicles can be divided into four sections, and that's where we got our verse this morning. The first section is about the genealogies, and you'll see there that what the author did is review the history of the Israelite nation. He said, from the family of Adam and Abraham and Isaac and so on and so forth. So nine chapters this author spent about the families of the Israelite nation. And then the second section is verses or chapter 10 to 20. It's about David's reign. And again, you see this person from 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings. And here he is again, 1 and 2 Chronicles. So if you see these six books or three books, some scholars would just consider them as three books, it's almost like similar to the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, where you see overlaps in these four Gospels about Jesus. It's like this. It's literally, they are similar. And then the third section of 1 Chronicles is chapter 21 to 27. It's about the state of Israel. You can read there the military power of Israel. You can read there the social life of Israel. You can read there the religious life of Israel. All these things that about Israel you can read in this seven chapters of 1 Chronicles. And then the last section is chapter 28 to 29, which is about the preparation to build the temple. And that's where we got our verse. It's actually part of a prayer of David, and it's a beautiful chapter. And so let's open our Bibles to 1 Chronicles and just go through this part of prayer of David. Verse 10 said, therefore David blessed the Lord before all the assembly. He gathered his people like Solomon did. And when we started the King Solomon, or King Solomon, he gathered all the people of Israel and he prayed to God. He said, blessed are you, Lord God of Israel, our Father forever and ever. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power and glory, victory and majesty. For all that is in heaven and on earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord. You are exalted as head over all. Both riches and honor come from you. You reign over all. In your hand is power and might. In your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. Verse 13. Now therefore, our God, we thank you and praise you, your glorious name. But who am I? Who am I? Who are these people that we should be able to offer you so willingly as this? For all things come from you, and for your own we have given you. For we are aliens, or in other versions, probably immigrants. For we are immigrants and pilgrims before you, as were us, our fathers. Our days on earth are short, some version would say shadow, and without hope. Verse 16, O Lord our God, all this abundance that we have prepared to build you a house, for your holy name is from your hand, and is all of your own. Verse 17, And I also know, my God, that you test the heart and have pleasure in uprightness. In some version, the NIV would say the integrity of the heart. So this is part of David's prayer when he gathered the people together because they were going to celebrate how much they have gathered the gold, the bronze, the silver, the precious stones, the precious metals that are prepared just for the building of the temple. Because when you go back to 1 Chronicles chapter 17, he prayed to God, God, I want to build you this temple. Because here we are, we're going to build this great kingdom. We're going to build fortresses. I'm going to build my own palace. But it seemed not right for me, God. David was saying this to himself, was talking to God. But it seemed not right for me that we're going to build these fortresses, these palaces, and you're going to still live in this tabernacle. You remember the tabernacle, the foldable tent? It doesn't sound right to me. My conscience is eating me, so I want to build you this temple. And then God said, no. God said, no. He said, there's too much blood in your hand, David. It's not for you to build a temple. And besides, I don't live in temples. I don't live in tents. I don't live in any man-made building. But he said, God said, I'm going to give the responsibility to my son Solomon. And so what you can see here in the heart of David is just the pureness of this intent to build God something that people can be proud of, but also God can be justly served. He's not building this temple. He's not planning to build a temple so that he can say, oh, look at what I've done. Look what I have. Look how much of gold I've collected. Look how much treasures I've collected just for the temple of God. Look how much I can brag because now we have this beautiful building. He's not doing that. He's not thinking of that selfishly. His intent was purely out of his motive to serve God. The pureness of his heart is still there. So that's why in Psalm chapter 78, he said that David led his people with integrity, with the pureness of heart. And so here we are in chapter 29 of 1 Chronicles. David is about to die. He's old. But his heart is still right with God. And you saw that in 1 Samuel chapter 16 as well as chapter 13 as well as Acts chapter 13 where the writer of Acts said that David's heart is like God. Right? Here in this last part of 1 Chronicles, you can see that rawness, that purity of David. He's old. And he has this heart to build the temple of God, but God said no, but he still collected the gold, he still collected the bronze, the silver, and so on and so forth. And so, these are the treasures that he have collected. In verse 2, now for the house of my God I have prepared with all my might gold, for things to be made of gold, silver, for things to be made of silver, bronze, iron, wood, stones, glistening stones, all kinds of precious stones, marble slabs, and so on and so forth. There's so much treasure that he has gathered just for the temple, even though he himself is not going to build the temple. Can you not appreciate the heart of David? Because if it is us, I probably would say, well, it's not going to benefit me. I'm not going to do that because it's not for me. It's not for my name. I'm not going to be able to print my name on this project, on that project. I'm not going to contribute to that. David's heart is not like that. it's very, very pure. It's very, very pure. Next slide, please. It seems like it's not working. There we go. I used to know a man. And this is a painting done by if I'm not mistaken, by an Italian, I think, back in the 1960s. This is called the Son of Man painting. I'm not really familiar with the painter, but I've seen this painting a couple of times. But I used to know a man, and his language is honesty. He doesn't cheat. He doesn't put you in a situation you feel like you are worthless or you don't know anything, where you feel like you're dumb. He values you and he makes it known to you that you are valued. He tries his best to be a pure person. Whether he's in his house or outside in public, he is the kind of person that you can trust. Whenever you make contracts with him, you don't have to have a written contract because his word is his bond. You can trust his word. Whatever he says, he does, and what he does, he says. He's a very reliable person because of his motive and the pureness of his heart. I used to know this man. And I think we used to know this man. And I think America used to love this man. And I think Christianity used to appreciate this person. But lately I've seen that we have forgotten this person. We have forgotten his name. And his name is, next slide please, integrity. We used to love integrity. We used to appreciate a person that has this pure motive. We used to shake the hands of somebody that can say, I will be there tomorrow, and they show up, even though they're late. We used to appreciate somebody that says, I will do this, and they follow through. But lately, it seems to me that we have lost track of this person. The American, like what I said, this is not just for me, this is not just for you, this is for the communities out there, Christian community. The Christian community has lost the appreciation of integrity. It's so sad to me that what we have become of is like, let's go to the person that's lesser evil. Isn't that sad? We come to a point where we pick, well, this one is lesser than this one. Well, this one is greater evil. Let's go to this one. I think to me personally, it's kind of sad that we have come to the point that we disregard integrity and we just go to the lesser person, the lesser evil. Integrity has lost its footing in the Christian community of America. And I'm not saying that we are or you are lies. It's not my point. What I'm saying is that we have lost the appreciation and the value of integrity. I'm not saying that you are dishonest. I think you are honest. I'm just saying that Christian community have lost the value of integrity. We used to know him, and we forgot him. Next slide, please. What is integrity? Well, integrity is the quality of being honest, of being pure, having strong moral principles. And you can just go on and click the remainder of this. I don't know what's wrong with this one. But it's a combination of honesty, dependability, and also purity of motives. It is the soundness of moral principle and character. This means the soundness of moral character and principle means that you have the right understanding of what you are doing, that what you are doing is in oneness with your character, but also in oneness with God. It means that you are morally upright. Your morality is not twisted. It's not subjected. It is very objective. It is in line with God. Integrity means that you are true to God's standard. Whatever God says in the Bible, you try your best to follow through, to follow those standards that God said. It is being not hypocrite, but being real. Being real inside your house, outside your house, in your workstation, in your work field, wherever you go, you are the same person. It's not like you're putting masks on Monday and then you change on Tuesday and then you change on Wednesday. It's the same face, the beautiful face, that integrity face. It's being honest, sincere, pure, and true. Integrity is moral alignment with God. And I hope that when we when we look at ourselves, we can say that I am aligned. I am aligned with God. God says that these are wrong, and I say these are wrong because God says that it's wrong. God says that this is right, then I'm going to say this is right because God says that it is right. That's being in alignment with God. That's integrity, being morally pure inside and outside, wherever you go. Next slide, please. There are 2 points I want to draw us from this morning. It's a phrase, person of integrity, and the other one is person of interest. In the criminal justice system, there's a phrase that they use, person of interest. A person of interest is somebody that is probably connected to some sort of crime. Probably he's not probably the criminal, but somehow he is connected to some crimes. He didn't commit the crime probably, but somehow he is a person of interest because of his connection to the action. He didn't do the action, but his connection to the action, to the deeds. And so there are a couple of people in the Old Testament that can easily become a cold person of interest. But in the moment where they were in the situation, they become not person of interest, but person of integrity. These are four individuals that we can look at this morning. First is Joseph. In Genesis chapter 39, he was seduced by his boss's wife, Potiphar's wife. Potiphar, probably showed some legs. I don't know. Showed some legs, but instead of Joseph saying, this is an opportunity, it's just me and her. I'm gonna devour her. Now he ran away. Even though nobody was looking, Joseph did not give in. He ran away. Job, on the other hand, same person, he could be easily a person of interest, but he chose to be a person of integrity. His wife told him when his kids died and all of his belongings was burned or either were stolen, his wife told him, curse God. Look what your God has done to you. Curse God. But what did Job say? Job say, who am I to curse the God that brought me here? I came to this world naked. I will return to God naked. He did not curse God. He did not sin, according to Job chapter 2, verse 9. Jesus also, in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 22, he was on the cross. He was reviled. He was accused. He was mocked. But 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 22 says, he did not retaliate. He committed no sin, despite of being hanged on the cross and being mocked. If it was me who was hanging on the cross, I would probably been, cursing. I'll show you. I'm going to call my 10,000 angels. I'm going to zap you out. The human attitude is there. But Jesus chose to be a person of integrity. Paul as well. In 2 Corinthians 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 12, he said that these people are accusing me, because you have seen this in a couple of writings of Paul, that people could not get into these congregations that Paul planted. So what they did was destroy the character of Paul. And so Paul wrote to the congregations like Galatians and 2 Corinthians, the church in Galatia as well as the church in Corinth, and he said, these people cannot destroy me because I am leaving a good example. My character is my evidence of who I am. My character is my evidence of who I am. Do you have your character as the evidence of who you are? Of who we are as a Christian community? Next slide, please. So for the Christian person, somebody said this is not my wording. He said that for the Christian person, the integrity looks like this: to live my life by godly standards, godly principles, godly values, no matter where I am, who I am with, or what circumstances I may be in. This is what integrity looks like for a Christian person. He is the same through and through. He's not just painted with blue outside, but inside he's black. No, he's blue in and out. He's white in and out. That is a Christian person. First Titus chapter 2, verse 7. And then we'll look a couple of verses as well from 1 Peter. It said, in everything, set them an example by doing what is good in your teaching. Show integrity, seriousness, and soundness so that those who oppose you live a good example so that those individuals, those persons that will bring a case against you will have nothing to show you. Why? Because your character proves them wrong. So that those who oppose you may be ashamed because they have nothing bad to say about you, about us. Integrity is very important. 1 Peter, a couple of verses here from 1 Peter. Verse 12 says, chapter 2, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. Peter said, do good works. Live as, you know, your life in a good example so that those who charge you will not only be shocked by your character, but also glorify God because they found out that your character is indestructible. You are true inside. You are true outside. You are who you are. You are who you say you are. Verse 15 said, same chapter, 1 Peter chapter 2, for this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of the foolish men. By doing good, you will put to silence the ignorance of other people. So we're not just doing good to be good, but we're doing good because we're called to be good. This is our identity. Goodness is our identity. Integrity is the Christian's identity. I cannot stand here if I am not right outside. I'm not saying that I'm perfect. On the other hand, I am a very flawed person. But there must be integrity in our community. There must be integrity in you and in me. We all must work together so that our integrity can be shown, can be proven true. First Peter chapter 3, verse 16 as well. Same author said, having a good conscience, that when they defame you as evildoers, when they accuse you that you are an evil person or that you are wrong or that you're fake or that you're not a Christian, those who revile you, those persons, may be ashamed. Because their accusations doesn't have any basis. Their accusations doesn't have any foundation, doesn't have anything in it. It's just an air. When you are a person of integrity, when I am a person of integrity, when Christians are a person of integrity, when a Christian community is a community of integrity. Next slide, please. So let's pluck at our eyes. I love this picture. I saw this from my Pixabay.com. I love this picture because what this photographer, I guess, did was he cut out the eyes of the person, and the eyes looks into herself. So I choose the word introspection because this goes well with what we're going to do this morning. Pluck out your eyes and look at yourself. Again, I'm saying not just for us, but the Christian communities out there. Christian communities, I'm calling out, pluck out our own eyes and look at ourselves. Are we being true of our claims of who we are? Are we being true of what we say we are? Are we walking the talk or are we just a big mouth blubbing? Look at ourselves. Who are we? We're the sons and daughters of God. Are we living that day in and day out, every day? And again, I'm reminding you over and over again, this is not just for me, this is not just for us, but it's for the Christian communities out there. Are we being true to ourselves? Next slide, please. Are you the same person when nobody's looking? Next slide, please. Are you consistent with your Christian faith? Pluck out your eyes and look at yourself. Christian communities. Can you be called a child of God? Or just a child by name? Next slide, please. So, I hope that we're not Christian communities out there, us and them, you know, the Christian world, that we're not a straw man, somebody that stands out there and scares the birds and crows, but doesn't really have any essence. I hope we're not a straw man, that we are really a being, a person that exudes integrity, that we are who we are, that we are who we say we are, that we walk the talk, that we are being true, that we are morally aligned with God. So let's not be somebody, us Christians and Christian communities out there, let's not be somebody that says something and does the other thing, one without substance. Let's be somebody that is really doing what we're saying, where people can take us at our word. Next slide, please. So, the points for us this morning is that I hope that we will keep our integrity intact wherever we are, whoever we're with, and that we will align with God, and that we will bring credibility to the table regardless of the setting, regardless if it's in your work, in your business, or so on and so forth. But whenever you come together to the table, whenever discussions about, you know, anything can happen, you come to the table with credibility, with integrity, that you're being true to yourself and to your God. Be the child of God in every moment, in any kind of environment, whether that's your Christian family or your social friends or your friends that are not Christians. Be the child of God. And don't be a person of interest. Don't be somebody that can be questioned, but be somebody that can show light and be a salt to this world. Be a person of integrity. Whenever we reflect on a couple of individuals' lives, like Tiger Woods, known golfer, like Bill Clinton, our previous president, or Matt Lauer from NBC, from Today Show, these individuals had so much influence. I think they still do. But their lives are a reflection of what they did. They were up here, but they made a couple of mistakes over a long period of time. A bad decision here, a bad decision there, giving to influence here, bad influence, and giving to another influence there. A moral disalignment from God over here and a moral disalignment from God over there. And over a long period of time, probably 20 years, their lives are not what they used to be. I cannot take their word now because they showed in the past that they are not true to themselves and they're not true to God. Because of the scandals, because of the immorality, because of the fakeness, because of being morally incorrect. In your lives, you spent how many years building your life to come to this point? You can cut a tree, a mature tree, a 30-year-old tree, in 30 seconds if you have a powerful saw. If we're gracious, 3 minutes. But that tree takes 30 years to grow and to mature. Your life is a mature tree. Don't take it down by a bad decision here, a bad decision there, giving over here, and a giving over there. You didn't spend 30 years maturing that tree just only to cut it down in 3 seconds, 3 minutes. What do you come out? What comes out of it? A toothpick. Did you grow a 30-year-old mature tree just to get a toothpick? The challenge for us this morning is this. Are you a straw man? Are we a straw man? I am a straw. Am I a straw man? Are Christians out there have lost the sense of integrity? I hope that we will go back and get to introduce ourselves again to the person of integrity, the one that we have forgotten. I hope that the Christian communities in America will start to love Him again. That we will not just be put in a situation where we will be forced to say, this person is the lesser evil, let's pick him. I hope that we'll stand up to what is morally right and say, I am a person of integrity, I'm going to do what is right. Not because there's just limited options, but because there is a right and wrong thing to do. And as a person of integrity, I'm going to choose what is morally right, what is morally aligned with God. As we think more about it this week, I hope that you can correct me if I am immorally not right. And I hope that we, each other, can check ourselves and look at ourselves if we're being true to ourselves and to our God. If there's anybody here that would like to be in alignment with God relationally, we invite you to come forward and we'll have a big gathering for you. We'll pray over you and we'll also baptize you if you haven't been yet.